organization. We call the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York. New York.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
Prepare yourself. You know what you must. Gonna have a friend in Jesus. So you know that when you die, he's gonna recommend you to the Spirit himself.
Definitely a God today, no doubt about it. Ladies and gentlemen, you're joining me here once again on the Drive Home at 5, yours truly, Curtis Sliwa. And we're going to be talking about what's happening south of the Mason-Dixon line down in Alabama in that contested U.S. Senate race involving Judge Roy Moore and the Democratic candidate, Doug Jones, who right now is ahead in most of the polls. But first, good news for me. 8 women have come forward to say that Charlie Rose, the pretentious a-hole that he is, has sexually harassed them in a number of ways. We'll discuss it towards the end of this program. With nudity, groping, and lewd calls. And the reason it's personal for me is after I was shot 5 times with hollow point bullets on the orders of John Gotti Sr. to John Gotti Jr. to the Gambinos in the summer of 1992, I appeared on 2 separate occasions on the PBS show with Charlie Rose and his guest, John Miller, who was considered the preeminent mob reporter at that time, both of whom said that I was lying. And then later on, as you know, in the trial, the guy who shot me is now doing 20 years, and John Gotti Jr. basically acknowledged that, yeah, I might have organized a hit on him, but you know something? There's a statute of limitations. Sliwa survived 2 attacks, and you can't touch this. Never got an apology from Charlie Rose or John Miller, now with the NYPD. Anyway, we'll get to that later on. But right now, we have on the line Flip Benham. He's an evangelical minister and the national leader of Operation Save America. And he was focused on because he was part of a group of Judge Roy Moore supporters who last week, after Judge Moore had a press conference, then had a confrontation with some of the media that were there. In fact, let's listen in on that.
Did you stop beating your wife, yes or no?
Sir, are you,
did
are
you,
you
stop beating your wife,
you
or yes or no?
Are you a man of faith? See, a man of faith.
Did you stop beating your wife? Answer, yes or no.
Like to meet my wife?
Yes or no. I said yes or no. So, friend, you don't want to show all of these deranged people out here that are frothing at the mouth. I don't know why. Why don't you just take a look at yourself in the mirror?
Now, Flip, first off, thanks for joining us here on the Drive Home at 5.
Good to be with you, Curtis. Thanks.
All right, so if you could explain that for us, because, boy, that got a lot of play. You know, people saw that all over the world. It went viral. Who are you directing that at?
To the reporters that were packing around Judge Roy Moore when he left, and they were screaming, "Can you categorically deny yes or no?" And can you? And they were, believe me, they were apoplectic. And I said to them, "Listen, if I had a mirror and you could see your faces, you know what you'd see in your faces? You'd see what I'm seeing right now is just utter hatred. You are carrying like torches and pitchforks, and you've got a hangman's noose, and you want him dead. You're not interested in justice for these women. You're not interested in justice for a Senate race or to keep the Senate pure. What you're after is to kill him." And they were jumping all over he and his wife, Kayla, and ramming those microphones right into their faces as they were trying to walk out of there. And this is just the way the media is. They have no desire for justice or the truth. They want him dead. They are a mob, a lynch mob, and it's really hard to reason with them. And the reason I asked them that question is because it was a logical fallacy. I mean, I ask you a question, Curtis, like this, and you got to answer it yes or no. Have you stopped beating your wife, yes or no? And no matter how you answer that, it would take you more words than a yes or a no.
But
to try and explain yourself is impossible to do because they've got you into a logical fallacy. And that's what the media was doing with Judge Roy Moore, and they're continuing to do it now.
All right, but Flip, would you say all the media? Because, you know, I'm certain that the Washington Post, the New York Times, they would love to have a notch on their belt that they were able to take down Judge Roy Moore in this Senate campaign. But there seem to be other reporters there, especially local reporters, who are just saying, you know, they were saying to you and some of the supporters of Judge Moore, we just need to ask the candidate some questions because we're in the middle of this very contested campaign.
Yeah, it's a very contested campaign. And here's the problem with their questions. They're going to say and try, and this is what they do. It's just like, can you categorically deny? My question, if I were to ask you, or one of the reporters said, don't we have a right, and don't these women have a right to speak up? And I said, of course they do. However, do they have the right to speak up against you when I tell you what you did with Leslie Bonachovic when she was 14 years old? Would she have a right to speak up like that against you and tell what you did? And they don't have any answer for that, because you see what they're doing is they're just throwing stuff up on the wall and trying to make
all right.
Moore. He is presumed guilty until proven innocent, and there's no way you can prove yourself innocent to litigate something 40 years ago.
All right, well, Flip, I want you to listen to one of his accusers, Lee Korfman, on the Today Show.
Well, now, which one is she?
She is the one who said that the...
Is she number one or number five?
No, the one who said she was 14. When she was preyed upon by the judge. This is what she told the Today Show.
Well, I wouldn't exactly call it a date. I'd say it was a meet. At 14, I was not dating. At 14, I was not able to make those kind of choices. I met him around the corner from my house. My mother did not know. And he took me to his home. After arriving at his home, on the second occasion that I went with him, he basically laid out some blankets on the floor of his living room and proceeded to seduce me, I guess you would say. And during the course of that, he removed my clothing. He left the room and came back in wearing his white underwear. And he touched me over my clothing, what was left of it. And he tried to get me to touch him as well. And at that point, I pulled back and said that I was not comfortable, and I got dressed, and he took me home.
Now, Flip Benham, the woman was very specific. The judge, when asked about this particular incident, has said he doesn't remember her or that scenario. Do you understand, like anybody listening to this, that it's really damning towards the judge?
Well, of course it is, and there's no question about that. She should have spoken up. She should have done something. Somebody should have helped her. And why she didn't go and talk to her mom and dad is beyond me. The fact of the matter is, however, she did not. And so what we've got is this story. Now, do you know that that's true?
No, of course, no.
I don't know that that's true. And there's no way to litigate that now. You see, if you don't do and deal with these things in the day that it is happening, in that time, not the exact day, but in that time that it's happening, and you don't go and you don't tell somebody, then what happens is you never allow justice to be done. Whether or not that happened, I do not know. But this thing I do know about Lyndon Baines Johnson, just a little picture that I could draw for you, and you know, he was a ruthless campaigner in Texas. And when he was campaigning for the United States Senate, he was campaigning against a guy that owned a bunch of pig farms all over the state of Texas. And he told his campaign manager this, and this is just an old story that we have heard because I was in Texas for 22 years, and this is just one of those old political stories that you hear there. And Lyndon Baines Johnson said, look, you need to tell these guys and tell him that he's been raping those pigs. And just let it out. And the campaign manager said, Lyndon, we can't do that. You know it's not true. Nobody's going to believe that. And he said, that doesn't matter. I just want to get it out there and see how he defends himself there. You see, you understand what is happening here is that you've got a number of people, and she said that he didn't force himself upon her. He did not, at least in her story. I don't know anything about that story. I shouldn't even be commenting about it. But I do know this. When 40 years ago in my life, if you'd seen some of the things that I had done, you would understand it's not good, friend.
No,
totally. Save me out of that.
Totally understood. That's Flip Benham. Wanted to ride the time machine back. Could have spent another segment talking about his indiscretions. He's an evangelical minister and a national leader of Operation Save America that has been protecting Judge Roy Moore on the campaign trail from what he says are overly aggressive reporters. Although that story about Linda Maines Johnson, I had heard, you know, that he implied that his adversary running for the U.S. Senate seat in Texas was raping pigs. Now, in Texas, I thought it was steers. No, wait a second. That has to do with queers, right? Steers, queers, not pigs. So I guess that's heterosexuals who would rape pigs. But that was Linda Maines Johnson. Oh, he was nasty as the day was long. But you know something? He got a pass to all of his indiscretions. In fact, you know what his chief of staff used to do outside of the West Wing? Used to sit there. And when Lady Bird Johnson would come, while Linda Maines Johnson was doing another intern or doing another female secretary, he'd block her and, you know, come up with evasive maneuvers until Linda Maines Johnson had a chance to get his pants back up, his drawers back up, and get the floozy out of the West Wing of the White House. And you thought the Kennedys were bad? Must have been something in the water back then from about 60 to 67.
Deep connections, deep understanding.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
He's a man of the people.
77 WABC.
It was a bombshell in Sunday's New York Post front page. There was a woman who had come forward who was alleging that the 55-year-old former assemblyman that Andrew Evilize Cuomo had tapped as regional director to the powerful Empire State Development Corporation had sexually harassed her, perved her, and then he paid her hush-hush money in order for her to go away. She has gone to federal court. She's not just suing the regional director, former regional director of the Empire State Development Corporation, Sam Hoyt. She's also suing Cuomo because she said that she was trying to reach him and give him a heads up. On the line to discuss it is Paul Legere. He's the lawyer for Lisa Marie Cater. Thanks for joining us, Paul.
Thanks for having me on, Curtis. I appreciate it.
Okay, so this obviously was very titillating, the fact that the governor is involved, although he's not being accused of perving or sexually harassing, is he?
No, he's not being personally accused, but I'll tell you, Curtis, bottom line is, this fella, Sam Hoyt, he was accused of misconduct, sexual misconduct, and having an affair with an intern in 2008 in the New York State Assembly. And even though that happened, somehow he got appointed to his powerful position in or around 2011. And in Governor Cuomo's own words, Sam Hoyt was a man who knew how Albany worked. And in this case, I guess he certainly did. He used that power, as we allege in the complaint, to give my client a patronage job. However, what you're not allowed to do, which is illegal, it's unlawful, it's disgusting, you can't hang that job over someone's head in an attempt to sexually harass them and engage in even more misconduct. Cannot do that.
All right, what exactly, Attorney Paul Legere, are you claiming that Sam Hoyt did to your client, Lisa Marie Cater?
We're claiming, most of all, that he deprived her of her constitutional liberties. So we filed it as a 1983 claim, but the specifics, as we allege in the complaint, are that Sam Hoyt consistently and pervasively sexually harassed her. Really egregious, unlawful text messages, and then at one point, as we allege in the complaint, groped her in private. Not exactly something that you expect from such a powerful statesman, former statesman, I should say, such as Sam Hoyt.
Okay, so we got it with Sam Hoyt. How does Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo, the governor, enter the picture? What role did he play or not play?
Well, I think it's the latter, Curtis. It's the role that wasn't played. When this stuff began to happen to my client, she tried every which way she could, as we allege in the complaint, to reach out to the state of New York, to reach out to the governor's office for cries of help. We're talking about Governor Cuomo, founder of a very powerful women's party in the state. And so when she reached out on the governor's Facebook page and she reached out via email on the governor's webpage, she was met with generic responses or no response at all. And that's the most egregious part about it.
Now, did anybody from any state agency ever try to reach out to your client, Lisa Marie Cater, after her allegations against Hoyt?
It was only after dozens of attempts, Curtis, and responding to generic emails that after being sexually harassed for months on end and having those cries fall on deaf ears, finally an organization known as J-COPE, which is a joint commission, I believe, on public ethics, got involved. But, you know, the funny thing is, as we allege in the complaint, Samuel Hoyt advised my client that he said J-COPE wouldn't do anything, and she was scared. And so here you have, again, one of the most powerful guys in the state working directly under the governor. As we allege, he was his right-hand man, very powerful appointee, dissuading my client from going any further with J-COPE. So, you know, I guess that's for Sam Hoyt how Albany worked.
So even though your client was directly trying to reach the governor or his staff in Albany, even going on his Facebook page, nobody from the governor's staff got back to her or the governor himself?
Nobody. Curtis, you have to understand, if I'm making a complaint on someone's Facebook page, certainly one of their agents, employees, affiliates, someone they hire, someone who works before the governor has to know about something going on. And if I send an email to the governor's webpage making a protected complaint, I too would expect a response, at least from someone in the office. You know, the buck stops at the top. The bottom line.
Do appreciate that. That's Attorney Paul Leggieri. He's the lawyer for Lisa Marie Cater, who says that Sam Hoyt, big time crony of Andrew Cuomo, who, by the way, had this affair in the assembly with an intern. And yet, as Paul mentioned, he gets kicked upstairs and gets a high-paying job as the regional director of the powerful Empire State Developing Corporation, an appointment by Cuomo himself. And Cuomo has taken the code of Omerta. That's right, disgrazia. That's right. That's why I call him Andrew Evil Eyes Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Brutta Cuomo, King Cuomo I.
Curtis Sliwa, the deepest knowledge of the city.
If you're the next mayor of the city of New York.
The Drive at 5, 77 WABC.
He never won go a Rikers Island. Him used to walk and screw up in fierce. But now he's spending enough time upstate.
5:40 as we continue on the drive home at 5. Comrade Bill de Blasio's administration doesn't even have a grip on the violence that's taking place on the Rock Rikers Island on a regular basis. I'm thinking back to February. We had done this story about how Rikers inmates were smuggling shivs, scalpels, up their butts. Meantime, political spats kept the body scanners that had been purchased for millions of dollars by the taxpayers turned off. That could have prevented most of that. And then I'm reading again a story by Reuven Blaw, same guy who had the byline in the original story of a recent slashing involving a Trinitaro who got slashed from his pretty much his neck to his ear by one of the many sects of Bloods that are housed in Rikers Island. And again, this idea of not using body scanners has surfaced, and that's months later. So we welcome once again Reuven Blaw of the New York Daily News to the Drive Home at 5. Thanks for jumping on board again, Reuven.
Curtis, thanks for having me. And also, before I start, I just wanted to, you know, I heard about some of your medical issues, and I just wanted to wish you a speedy recovery, or as we say in Hebrew, or, you know, or refuah shleima.
Oh, thank you. December 13th, I go under the scalpel that hopefully has been antiseptically kept clean and wasn't up somebody's rear on Rikers Island that was used to slash one another. But thanks for that, Reuven. You wrote the original story that things were out of control there because inmates were slashing one another with hidden objects up their derriere. How come that hasn't been addressed?
You know, it's just been one of those, one of those many issues that seems to have gotten stuck in Albany, in the mess of Albany. The city actually has purchased these devices, these sophisticated ionizing body scanners, similar to the ones that are used in airports. But they are literally just collecting dust in some type of warehouse or storage facility in the city's correction department.
So, Reuven, that means that TSA full body scanner that I recently had to go through on a trip to Denver where you have to hold your hands over your head and it totally scans your body. That's good enough for passengers, but for what reason are they not using it for inmates?
Well, state lawmakers have told us that, that they are concerned about the radiations that they emit. And their argument is they feel that inmates will kind of more frequently use these, be searched by these devices. You know, we, go through these body scanners, typically not that frequently. And that's their concern, that the inmates are going to be going through this routinely, and they feel that that could cause a health hazard.
Now, who's their lobbyist on this? Because I can't imagine the correctional union is upset with the use of this machinery that's just now growing moss and cobwebs because of its inactivity.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure who's kind of the driving force behind this. Marty Golden has been, outspoken on the issue of blocking this. I'm not sure who behind that has been pressing for for these to stay out of the system. On the flip side, I guess you mentioned the unions are really pushing for them to be put in place.
Okay.
As well as the city.
And I understand that. But in order for Shiv to get onto Rikers Island, unless somehow they were able to make it on the island, which isn't an easy thing, that means that contraband is coming across that bridge from Steinway Street in Astoria and being possibly deposited into the pockets or the hands of an inmate when they get a visit.
Yeah, that is some of it. That does happen quite frequently, according to jail brass. But the other part of this is that Rikers Island, the facilities there are old, and inmates are they are smart, and they, shape and form shivs out of pieces falling off the walls or, any little area of the facility that they can get their hands on.
Now, Reuven Ball, if I kept sticking a shiv or a scalpel up my tuchus, eventually, there might be a price to pay. I might move the wrong way or somebody shoves me. There's a fight. I haven't quite extracted it appropriately. I could end up cutting my insides. Have there been any reports of that while they're securing these objects in their rectums?
There haven't. That's an interesting question. What I believe, what I've been told, is that they cover it with plastic or with tape. That actually kind of helps mask it from the regular metal detectors as well. So they're not putting the actual the sharpened area in those, secret spots.
Now, I know we have a brand new correctional chief who took over for Punt, who went back to do moose calls in Maine. But the woman in charge now is also from Maine. Am I correct?
Yeah, Cynthia Brand. She's worked with him in Maine as well. And, this has been a calling card for the department for several years. They feel that a big part of the violence is due to this lack of, proper body scanners. I mean, on the flip side, some critics say that, hey, it's not just that. That's not the panacea. More other steps need to be taken to sort of get a grip on the island.
So the Correctional Department Union, they want these scanners activated. I'm assuming the brass at Rikers Island, they want it activated, but you're saying that they have to get permission in Albany from the state legislature?
Correct. Yes, correct. And critics have said that, the city said it publicly, the union has kind of lobbied for this publicly, but critics have said also that the Blasio administration hasn't done enough in Albany to sort of make it happen, which is something that, people have said regarding other parts of his, agenda in Albany as well.
Right, but I'd love to know which elected officials in Albany, on either side of the aisle, Democrats or Republicans, either in the state Senate or the Assembly, are actually defending this notion that if you use these scanners, similar to what we go through, the TSA full-body scanner when we're pulled out of the line at an airport, that somehow that may be harmful to inmates because of radiation. I wish some person would attach their name and face to this.
I mean, some have. There's not one person specifically who's kind of leading the charge against it. You know, it just seems like it's just kind of the general Albany malaise. And, you know, the State Assembly Health Committee Chairman Richard Gottfried has, you know, has kind of talked about how they've been trying to work with City Hall to make this happen. But there hasn't really been one specific point person against it that's kind of taken the, you know, the credit, I guess, for lack of a better term, for nixing all of this.
All right, do appreciate that, Reuven Blah. I know when I was locked up, the biggest problem we had was some scale would have a single-bladed razor, single-edge razor, and they would have tape around it, and then they would tuck it in the back of their tongue. And then they pull it out, slash it, and then put it back in their tongue or just try to get rid of it. Now, imagine how it's escalated. An inmate does a squat and thrust. I guess with petrogel or Vaseline, he prepares his anal canal and then shoves up there a shiv or a scalpel. And then at the appropriate moment, when the target of their retaliation is taking place, they pull it out, they slash the inmate, and they either stuff it back up their tuchus or discard it. And we have spent millions of dollars on machines that would detect that, but we're worried that the inmates might get radiation poison. And none of the legislators up in Albany want to attach their names to defending the inmates from having to sit in these scanning devices. Is this not crazy? Guys are getting slashed on Rikers Island, and that includes screws, correctional officers, because inmates secure, that's right, secure shivs and scalpels up their butt. And we let them keep doing it because, let's face it, does anybody really care what goes on Rikers Island other than families, friends, and those whose loved ones have to be stuck working there?
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
Guardian Angel found a Curtis Sliwa.
Really trying to help our cause.
WABCRadio.com.
Get ready for the big payback.
Oh, yeah.
The big payback.
And this is sweet.
That's where I land.
Charlie Rose, you pretentious a-hole. They're on the Bloomberg Network. They're on PBS, CBS in the morning, and 60 Minutes. Well, first off, the reason I'm attacking Charlie Rose is that eight women have told the Washington Post that Charlie Rose made unwanted sexual advances towards them, including lewd phone calls, walking around naked in their presence, groping their breasts, buttocks, and genital areas. Now, why it's personal for me and why this guy is such a sfachim and a schifosa is, as you all know, I got shot on the orders of the Gottis on June 19th of 1992 in the back of the cab in the Lower East Side. June 19th, 1992. And then there were a number of PBS shows in which Charlie Rose hosted, and his guest expert was John Miller at the time on NBC, considered the preeminent expert when it came to reporters covering the Gottis and the Gambinos. And they were doubting me every step of the way. Here's just a little sample of what the both of them said on July 23rd of 1992.
All right, now, is this Curtis doing this because he wants to be on the front page of the New York Post? Or
ask him.
Well, I'm asking you what you think first.
I have the feeling that Curtis liked the sound of the story and believed it.
And so he exaggerated himself further, or the reporter misunderstood? Or
okay. All right, so they came to that conclusion then. 12 years later, John Gotti Jr. gets indicted, along with Michael Leonardi, who shot me on his orders, and Joey D'Angelo for the kidnap and attempted murder in federal court. You would think that maybe Charlie Rose would have said, hey, you know, I misjudged what John Miller. No. No, because they're pretentious a-holes. They've always been that way. And naturally on PBS, they can be that. But Charlie Rose, it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. And remember, it's almost like a tit for a tat. One day it's a Republican conservative, and the next day it's a Democrat liberal progressive from North Carolina, where now they have almost as many pigs on their pig farms, the Hazarites, as they have in Iowa. Well, guess what, Charlie Rose? I hope you start squealing like a pig, because where there is smoke of eight women coming forward, there is fire. And what's Oprah Winfrey's girlfriend going to say, who's his colleague in the morning? Is she going to demand that Charlie Rose be removed from CBS this morning? Will he no longer be on 60 Minutes? Will he no longer be on his Charlie Rose PBS show? Will the Bloomberg Network stop carrying that show? Let's see now. Let us see if all of this pressure will cause him to go back to farming pigs in North Carolina, where he started years ago, going, "Suey, suey, suey, slap the horse. You spachim, you skifosa, vengeance is mine."